Actually, this isn't the first time we've dealt with a tax collector in our surveying through the Gospel of Luke. If you were here a couple of Sundays ago, we learned how tax collectors were regarded in Jesus' day. And as we did that, we conceded that tax collectors in any day, in any context, would not win a popularity contest. But in Jesus' day, we discovered that tax collectors were viewed with particular disdain. And the reason for this actually has less to do with economics and more to do with patriotism. You see, in Jesus' day, it was the practice of the ruling Roman authorities to put Jewish men in charge of the tax collection from their fellow countrymen. And so what you had were Jewish tax collectors extracting wealth from their fellow countrymen and giving the proceeds to the governing Roman authorities, filling, if you will, the Roman treasury. So tax collectors, as a result, were viewed in Jesus' day as traitors. They were helping the Roman authorities to tighten their control on the Jewish population. Well, Luke ratchets up the tension as he begins this account and identifies a man, Zacchaeus, who was a chief tax collector and Luke tells us was wealthy. If Zacchaeus were your typical tax collector, that would have been bad enough. But Luke explains that Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. That is, Zacchaeus made his wealth by skimming proceeds from tax collectors under his care. Accordingly, there is a very good chance that even among fellow tax collectors, Zacchaeus would have found himself on the outside. He would have been a highly unpopular man. It's likely that the only identifiable group that would have thought favorably upon Zacchaeus would have been those who would have benefited from the filling of the Roman treasury. So here you have this massively unpopular man who happens to be quite wealthy, tracking the movement of Jesus through Jericho. Why? Why? Luke simply tells us that Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was. Initially, we don't know if this is idle curiosity, or perhaps Zacchaeus had heard about how Jesus had made a habit of making friends with tax collectors and sinners. You'll recall that at this stage, Levi, a former tax collector himself, was among Jesus' closest companions. It's possible the tax collecting fraternity was a very tight-knit group, and Zacchaeus wanted a glimpse of the man who convinced his colleague Levi to leave his tax collecting ways behind. We just don't know for sure what motivated Zacchaeus' desire to be in close proximity to Jesus. What we do know, however, is why he climbed a tree to do so. Luke tells us that Zacchaeus was a short man, and as a result, he could not see Jesus because of the crowd. And being an ambitious man, Zacchaeus ran ahead, climbed a sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. Now, it's possible this elevated pulpit doesn't give you an accurate appreciation for how tall I am. But those of you who've stood next to me know that I am quite an average height. And if you're Gavin Collins or Tim Lightbourne, you might say, well, actually, I would say you're short, Bryn. And in fact, whether you say I'm of average height or whether I'm short, I can tell you that my vertical challenges were even more pronounced when I was a young schoolboy. And I have some evidence for you here today. I think up on the screen, if you look to the left and you see my head circled, you know, do the lining up. I've got to be the second shortest, or close to the second shortest in my grade school class. And so I can tell you, I resonate with Zacchaeus here, because every instance when I was a little boy, if there was a crowd gathered, I had trouble seeing what was going on. And as some of you know, I used to frequent hockey games and baseball games, and I had to be very innovative in order to see what was going on. It was often the case that someone much taller than me was in front, and you'd have to kind of sit on the seat with your heels tucked back, and it's kind of kneeling and just doing all you could as a short little boy to see what was going on. So I come to a story like this in Luke 19, and I get pretty excited. I get pretty excited because a short guy is at the center of attention here. And I resonate with this wee man's predicament. I'm thinking, good for you, Zacchaeus. Don't let those tall people push you around. You go and you get in that tree and you get yourself a way better vantage point than the rest of them. Then Luke describes the moment when Jesus passes in front of the tree. Jesus looks up and says, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. And so he came home, he came down at once and welcomed Jesus gladly. Now keep in mind that Zacchaeus and Jesus had never met before. Luke has already told us that Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was, implying that he didn't know who he was. Well, apparently, Jesus knew who Zacchaeus was. And Jesus had in mind a particular outcome for Zacchaeus. Dear friends, is this not a common experience, even today? Many people hear about Jesus. If you're in school for any length of time, you learn some things about Jesus. And maybe this stirs a person to start attending some church services or to start reading their Bible. Many people come to church even today because, like Zacchaeus, they're hoping that by coming to church or by reading their Bible, they will catch a glimpse of Jesus. We come to investigate. We come to satisfy some curiosity about Jesus that we've been harboring. But then something startling happens along the way. We thought we were coming simply to observe Christ and to learn about Him. But something happens. And in the middle of the church service, we have the sense that Christ is observing me. I thought I could come and audit this class, learn a few things, satisfy some curiosities, but then I get the sense that as I sit here, Christ is observing me. Has that been your experience? As I think back, this is exactly what happened to me many years ago. I was induced by a relative to attend a Christian camp. And that was not an impressive thing to me, to attend a Christian camp as a teenager. But I was lured by the prospect of playing a variety of sports and meeting a number of young, pretty women. So I went into this Christian sports camp. And I was prepared to tolerate the Christian aspects of that camp. I was prepared to sit back politely during Bible study time and observe what was being taught. But then, Jesus called me. He clearly called me through His Word and through His people. Christ called me. And 20-some years later, I'm standing here in a pulpit speaking to you. Dear friends, is it possible that you've come here today looking for a glimpse of Jesus? It's possible you've come simply to blend in with the crowd, to see what they see, to experience what they experience. And yet I want to invite you this morning to consider the possibility that as you sit and as I stand, Jesus Christ is calling you this moment, this day. If Christ is calling you, or if He has called you at some previous point in your life, I want us to look to Zacchaeus as an example of how we should and ought to respond. First of all, look to the text. You'll notice that Zacchaeus received Jesus immediately. Zacchaeus received Jesus immediately. In fact, if we were to literally render the Greek here, it more literally reads, Zacchaeus hurried down. Hurried down. And Luke writes that Zacchaeus hurried and came down. You see, I worry that we often miss the urgency behind the commands of Jesus. Many imagine that we can take our time with the imperatives found in Scripture. Well, I'm reminded of a story told by C.S. Lewis. And in the story, a senior devil is questioning his junior devils about their strategy for deceiving humanity. So the first junior devil says to the senior devil, "My plan is to tell the people that there is no God. That there is no God." And the senior devil responds, "Well, that isn't going to work. Just about everybody gets that there's something beyond us out there. Just about everybody gets that there is a God. You need a better plan." And the second junior devil comes along and says, "My plan is to tell them that there is no hell." And the senior devil responds, "Well, that's only going to delude a few people, because most people get that sin and evil needs to be punished, that there needs to be consequences for wrongdoing. It will not succeed if that's your plan to tell them there's no hell." Then along came the third junior devil, and he said, "My plan is to tell the people there is no hurry." "Go," said the senior devil, "go and you will ruin men by the thousands. There is no hurry." It is a great lie. And I know there's a temptation to procrastinate, to put off the things of Christ, until following Jesus becomes something we see ourselves doing later in life. Maybe in our final days, but not now. So we put it off for a time. Well, on that point, I can tell you that at a very young age, I developed a very bad habit that I'm going to share with you, and I have been unable to shake this habit as an adult. And if you doubt me, you can speak to Allie, my wife, following this morning's service. So this was my habit. When I was a boy, my mother would call me from the kitchen. It was a kind call. She would say, "Bryn, it's dinner time. Come to the table." And I would respond, "Okay." And I would keep doing whatever it was I was doing. I wouldn't come. A few minutes later, I would hear the call again come from the kitchen. But this time with a little more volume. "Bryn, it's dinner time. Come to the table." "Okay, Mother, I'll come. Coming right now." And I'd keep doing what I was doing. Finally, my mother would leave the kitchen. She would come to where I was, and she would say, "Bryn, come to the dinner table this minute." And I would go. I mean, I wasn't that dumb. I would go. Why do I tell that story? I worry that some of us are playing the same game with the call of Jesus Christ. We hear the call of Christ in the distance. We maybe even acknowledge it. But for whatever reason, we refuse to move away from what we are currently doing. It's as though we're waiting for a more stern call, waiting for a more definitive call from the Almighty. But that call may never come. Zacchaeus, come down from the tree at once. Zacchaeus wasn't going to take any chances. He wasn't going to wait for a second or third call. Zacchaeus received Jesus immediately, on the spot. The second thing we notice is that Zacchaeus received Jesus joyfully. Zacchaeus received Jesus joyfully. And the Greek word that's used here is the word kairo. Kairo, which literally means full of cheer. Zacchaeus received Jesus full of cheer. I love that description. Maybe you've had this experience. I've met many individuals who have confessed to me that their delay in coming to Jesus Christ is related to joy. These individuals imagine that coming to Christ would mark the end of all joy. That it would mark the end of having any amount of fun in this life. Well, friends, if the first great deception is that there is no hurry, I would submit to you that the second great deception is the notion that coming to Christ will kill your joy. That coming to Christ will kill your joy. The opposite is true. Jesus says in John 15 that abiding in Him will actually complete our joy. So we're going through life, we're having positive experiences, we're having high moments, we're having some joyful seasons, but we feel like we're not quite as happy or quite as joyful as we want to be or ought to be. And along comes Jesus and says, I can help you reach the mark. Abide in me, he says, and I will complete your joy. I'll fill it up to the brim. I'll make it what it was designed to be. We read on in John's Gospel, chapter 17. Jesus is praying to the Father, and He prays for you and for me. He prays that we may have the full measure of His joy. That we might have the full measure of the joy of Jesus Christ. Look at the responses of those who receive Christ in the New Testament. You'll see a consistent pattern. Those who received Christ are filled with joy. And Zacchaeus is but one of those examples. Look at this man. He led a shallow life. A shallow life centered around deceiving others and accumulating wealth. Until the day he meets Jesus. When Jesus called, Zacchaeus received him joyfully. Zacchaeus received Jesus immediately, without delay. He received Jesus joyfully. And finally, he received Jesus thoroughly. He received Jesus thoroughly. Well, what do I mean by that? I mean to say that Zacchaeus didn't simply go through the motions. It wasn't that he was just simply following orders. But Zacchaeus received Jesus in such a way that it radically transformed him and dramatically changed the trajectory of his life. That's what we see in verse 8. Zacchaeus says, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay it back four times." To which Jesus responds, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost." Now, this passage is in the greater context of the Gospel of Luke, which is in the greater context of the New Testament, which is in the greater context of the entire Bible. And it's important to mention that, because if you were dropped out of the sky and the only passage of Scripture you ever read was this one, you might be tempted to believe, well, the way to get into heaven is to give away a lot of money. That if I give away half my possessions, then I get in. That's the ticket. But the Bible is clear on this point. No one gains salvation. No one gets into heaven. No one is justified by Christ because of good deeds. No one gets in because they gave a certain amount of money, or they attended a certain amount of services, or they attended a certain amount of Bible studies. No one gets into heaven based on our good deeds. Zacchaeus was not favored by God because he wrote a big check that day. What Zacchaeus giving away his wealth reveals is that he received Jesus thoroughly. That it radically changed him. That an inward transformation had taken place so that he now thought differently about Jesus and the world around him. And this caused him to give up some things. Well, does this mean that our sincere reception of Christ should yield the same response? Do we need to be giving away massive amounts of money as a demonstration that we have received Christ thoroughly? Do we need to do as Zacchaeus did? Possibly. But not necessarily. Because the pattern we see in the New Testament is this. That those who receive Jesus thoroughly loosen their grip on worldly things. People who receive Christ thoroughly loosen their grip on worldly things. And quite frankly, I don't know what you're gripping most tightly. Even as I look out here and see individuals that I might say, hey, I know that individual well. I know none of you well enough, except my wife. I know none of you well enough to suggest to you this morning what you have too tight a grip on. It might be your wealth that you're gripping too tightly to. It might be your career, your reputation among your peers and your colleagues. You're clinging too tightly to how others view you in the professional world. It might be that you're gripping too tightly to a vision you have for your family. That your children will grow up a certain way, and that your relationship with them will take on a certain character. It might be your vision of family that you're gripping too tightly. Or maybe you're gripping most tightly to your independence. You enjoy doing as you please. You enjoy being subject to no one. I simply want to remind you this morning that those who receive Christ thoroughly loosen their grip on such things. Now, as I sat in my study this week and writing this message, and I'm trying to write a conclusion, it dawns on me, and it dawns on me often, if not weekly, that no matter how skillfully I might marshal my words, without Christ, they will have no impact upon you. What I mean is, I just don't have the skill. I don't possess the ability to get you to do something in particular. So if all I'm doing is issuing a call from Bryn McPhail, well, this will be easy to brush off. The arguments will be easy to pull apart, and you'll go on doing what you were doing before you came here this morning. If I'm the only one calling, then carry on as you were. But again, what I want you to consider this morning is Christ calling. As you sit here this morning, is there something going on that we cannot see that's beyond this wee man in a pulpit? Is Christ calling you? And if he is, I want you to understand the urgency in which we must respond to that call. If Christ is calling you, I want to assure you that heeding the call of Christ will become a fountain of great joy for you in your life. But lastly, I want you to know that heeding the call of Christ will radically change you. Not instantly, not overnight, but if Christ has his way with you, day after day, week after week, year after year, he will change you and make you like him. Friends, this is a good thing. This is a great thing. It's the reason God made us. It's the reason he redeemed us. And that's why he's calling you. Maybe even today. And if he's calling you, I ask you to heed the example of Zacchaeus. Hurry up. Hurry to Jesus. Today. Amen.